Joining us in studio right now, though, is our good friend, Dr. Natalie Marks. She is the, what are you, the chief medical officer? What are you at Blum Animal Hospital? What's your official title?
The medical director.
The medical director. I keep getting that wrong. The medical director of Blum Animal Hospital, which is at Belmont and Clark, just a few blocks south of Wrigley Field. One of the biggest animal hospitals here in Chicago, right?
That's right.
Multiple times voted favorite or best veterinary practice in Chicago, correct?
Yes, many times.
Many times. Oh, I'm sorry. Many times voted best practice in Chicago. It's where Steve Dale takes his pets. It's where we take our dog, Bailey. And it's a wonderful practice with lots of wonderful people, just like Dr. Natalie Mark. So we wanted you to come swing by tonight if you had time, because it is getting very hot out now and it is summer season. And I know that there are certain things we need to be aware of with our pets, and things that as a veterinarian, I imagine you want your clients to be proactively doing with their pets at home so that they don't have to come visit you when it's not scheduled to happen.
That's right. Yeah. And we're supposed to have this, doesn't look like it right now, but a horrible heat advisory this weekend. Yeah. So one thing that we see every summer, and we see too much of, unfortunately, are dogs coming in with heat stroke or heat exhaustion. It doesn't take much for your dog to overheat. Obviously, we want to provide fresh water and shade, but that really does little to cool dogs as they overheat at the parks. And one thing that every pet owner should remember is dogs don't sweat like we do. They can lose water and cool a little bit through their tongue and a teeny bit through the pads of their feet, but they really don't sweat. So unlike us, where we can cool that way, they can't. And things as simple as leaving them in a car while you run in and grab your Starbucks in the morning. On a hot day, it only takes about 30 minutes for your car to go from about 80 degrees to 125 degrees. And it doesn't take long for that to be a life-threatening situation. So not just having them wait in a parked car, but also exercising at the park. You know, I always tell owners between 10 and 4, we really don't like to see our dogs being out and super active, because it's the heat of the day. And with the humidity we're supposed to have, again, it won't take long for your dogs to have excessive panting or drooling or even trouble walking. And that body temperature can escalate to over 107 degrees. And that is a life-threatening situation.
And I think a lot of us think, oh, it's okay, we'll have plenty of water for them, or we'll have ice cubes. But is that always enough, or is that not necessarily?
No, it's not, because they just can't cool their body down. So if you're at a park or a dog beach or somewhere and you start to see your dog not wanting to walk and excessively panting, and maybe their gums are turning a little bit different color, they're not that happy pink, or they're stumbling, or they start to vomit, that is something to take serious note of. I would seek medical attention if you can right away. But on the way, things you can do, we don't want to ice anything on a dog, because that's too much of a shock of the body temperature and it can actually cause more damage. So cool water towels that you can drape over the dog. If you have rubbing alcohol close by, if you're at home or in the backyard, you can wet down the pads of a dog's feet with rubbing alcohol and that will cool them.
Really?
Yep. That's interesting. Kind of a crude home way to do that. But again, no ice. We definitely don't want that. If you can check your dog's temperature, it's really important to know that a dog's temperature really shouldn't be over 102.5 degrees. So they do run a little bit higher than us normally. But we see dogs, like I said, unfortunately, 105, 106, or even not even registering, which is over 107. And those dogs can have some life-threatening complications. So it's something to definitely take seriously. Again, see too much of this. So I would encourage owners, especially those that have the smushed face breeds, the English Bulldogs and Pugs and Bostons, those dogs with the very smushed faces, they cannot cool. And they are the ones that are most prone to overheating. Mm.
What about dogs? So like our dog Bailey is very shaggy.
Yes.
And is that more of a danger than in the summertime, or does that not make a difference?
No, it's actually a common misconception. We don't shave dogs. We don't recommend that for cooler weather. They have their body coat, their hair coat for a reason, and they it's not going to help them cool more, because again, they don't sweat like we do.
Right.
So,
but I would just think if you got a fur coat on, you're going to be hotter than if you didn't.
Yeah, you would think that, but there's
no.
But most of our dogs that overheat are dogs that are short coated, like English Bulldogs and Pugs, and so it doesn't really make a huge difference. It's really more the exposure and what they're doing and how they're exercising, and can they cool down.
Producer just asked in my ear, what about a double coat? Is there such a thing? Dogs have a double coat?
Dogs like Huskies and the ones that have the undercoat? Is that what you're saying?
Go ahead and jump on air, Jess.
Hi.
Hey, Jess.
Correct. So I have two really fluffy dogs, and one's a mixed breed and one's a full-blooded. I believe both of them have double coats. Mm-hmm. Is it better or not, I guess, more productive to trim them like in the summertime if they have a double coat?
Yeah, no, I mean, most of our the specialists in our area would say you shouldn't, that we really don't recommend shaving, again, because they're used to their own body temperature in the coat that they have. It's more important to avoid those hot times of the day and to be watching them, just kind of monitoring when you're out and about walking to make sure they're not showing signs that they're not tolerating the heat.
We did a, going back to the hot cars, we did a video with Steve Dale a year or two ago where we sat him in a hot car and put a fur coat on him and put a hat on him. And it wasn't crazy hot out that day, but the car got up to like 115 degrees very quickly.
Yeah.
And so even if you, we think, oh, it's quick and we'll leave the windows cracked. That's a really bad idea.
It is. Yeah. And especially those breeds I mentioned, because they just cannot cool well.
Yeah.
So, I just tell people, if you're going out on errands and it's in the summertime, I know it's awesome to take your dog and be out and about, but it's really not the best place for them to be. Leave them at home.
There have been a lot of headlines about the CDC and ticks.
Yes.
And the tick population really exploding. And working with Steve, we talk a lot about this. And our dog Bailey had a tick on him in February, which seemed insane because from what I know about ticks, they generally are in brushy areas and things like that. It was February. It wasn't really warm out. And we don't have big high weeds or anything near our house. And Bailey is always on leash. So I was stunned by that. And then just a few weeks ago, when we were at the baseball park with the boys, but we were parked in a concrete lot, we come back after the game, and we had a tick on our dashboard. And that just seemed crazy to me. And that, but then you read these stories that the tick population is really booming and exploding. Mm-hmm. How much do we have to worry about that with our dogs?
It's a huge problem. It's the worst year on record for all populations. And the reason you're seeing ticks in February and in places where we normally wouldn't see them is because ticks have to have freezing temperatures for more than 2 weeks for them to not be reproducing and populating. And unfortunately, our winter here, we didn't see that this year. Mm. We had a few days of cold weather, and then I remember some days where we were at 60 degrees. So if that's the case, basically they overwinter in sort of the permafrost, that little layer on the top of the ground where it's sort of a variable temperature, and they just kept reproducing and reproducing. So the numbers are sort of out of control right now. And they're also discovering there's a lot of new diseases out there from ticks that we didn't even know about. So for our dogs, it's really, really important to make sure that they're on a flea and tick preventative monthly and talking to your veterinarian, making sure they're making the right choice for your dog's health and your dog's exposure. Most of them are monthly. A few of them are up to 3 months of protection, but it's also important to be checking your dogs when they're going outside. And it, you know, the classic thing, like you mentioned, of having to be in like a forest preserve or in big tall grass. We know that's not the case anymore because ticks hitch rides on dogs that are going to those places and maybe coming into your neighborhood. Mm. In the city, we see dogs that never leave Lincoln Park, the coming in with ticks or getting them at the dog beach, because other dogs go to Wisconsin and Michigan and bring populations back on them.
So you said that there's flea and tick preventives, and there's a lot of them out there. I guess mm-hmm. the most important thing is talk to your veterinarian about which one is right for you and your dog and your lifestyle, and don't just go to some over-the-counter store and pick up something that says naturally prevents ticks. I mean, these really good medications work, but they need to be prescribed by a veterinarian for the most part, right?
We do recommend that because there's a lot of different signs that dogs present with tick disease. So it can be anything from flu-like syndrome to arthritis to kidney failure. And some dogs get meningitis. I mean, there's so many different diseases out there. And we really want to make sure that when we're protecting these dogs, that we're using the ones that have had the research behind it and have had studies behind them to show that they actually work. So naturally occurring products out there, while it might sound nice and fluffy to a lot of people. Because
people are all, oh, I don't want to use anything too harsh. So we want to use this. And, you know, we'll hear people, oh, onions work, or this works, or this oil works. But there is no research behind those things. Mm-hmm. And while these might be harsh chemicals, when you read it, it's going to prevent the tick. And they've been researched. We believe that they're safe and things like that as far as pharmaceuticals go, right?
Well, right. The other thing, though, to remember, and I always encourage owners to think about this, is if there's a tick on your dog and you were walking that dog, there's a chance that that tick is on you. Mm-hmm. Or if your dog is outside and it has 20 ticks on it, and remember, ticks are tiny. They're very, very hard to see. If you're not using the right preventatives to make sure those ticks are dying, you know, ticks can survive a lot of things. We say ticks only die from blowtorches. So those ticks are going to come into your home on your dog and potentially be exposure for disease to your family. Mm-hmm. So as a, you know, I like to think of myself sort of our practice is like family doctors, because we're worried about protecting your dogs and cats and doing the best for their health. But we also, as public health officers, are responsible for the diseases that are zoonotic, that can that go from dogs to people or from animals to people. And tick disease is sort of one of these enigmas that can affect both our veterinary populations, dogs and cats, and also humans. And sometimes we know and are educating clients a lot more than their human doctors are in some areas of tick disease. So I really encourage owners to think about that aspect, because the last thing you want to do is be exposing your family to Lyme disease because we aren't protecting your dog.
Yeah. Lyme disease is the big one we hear about. There are other tick diseases out there we need to worry about. You mentioned that ticks affect both dogs and humans. Dogs don't spread any tick disease to humans, right. But there is another disease that dogs spread to humans that actually killed a man in New York City last year. Let's talk about that next. 312-591-7200 if you have a question for Dr. Natalie Marks from Blum Animal Hospital here in Chicago. We'll be taking that right after we take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Apple Bauer with you, 720 WGN. My final broadcast from the historic Tribune Tower. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Next week, we'll be in the Allstate Skyline Studios at 303 East Wacker. In studio with us right now for a few more minutes, Dr. Natalie Marks from Blum Animal Hospital, blumvet.com.
That's right. Is that
the website?
Yes.
You can visit them online and schedule an appointment. Go see Dr. Marks or Dr. Georgeson or one of the other fine doctors that they have up at Blum Animal Hospital at the corner of Belmont and Clark, in a really cool area that's really changed a lot in the last few years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's good crazy though, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's it was always a good area, but it's really being built up now like crazy.
Yeah, with all the development from Wrigley. Absolutely.
Yeah, is that kind of spilled all the way down?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot busier, which is hard. I mean, we plan our days by Cubs games. So
I imagine. Well,
but it's good. It's good.
Good time to be near
great neighbors. Yeah, we have great neighbors.
Okay, so we talked as we were going into the break about a zoonotic disease. So that's a disease that can be passed from an animal to a human.
Right.
That actually killed a guy in New York City last year, and we don't hear a lot about it. It's called leptospirosis. What is this, and how do we watch out for it?
Well, it's the most common zoonotic disease worldwide. So we have to know about it. And the reason we have to know about it in Chicago is because it's a bacteria that lives in rodents, and they live harmoniously with it, and then they urinate it out in standing water sources. So we just got named the rattiest city in the U.S. Yeah, what a title. because of that, unfortunately, we have a huge reservoir of this disease. It's from rats and raccoons and possums and lots of other of our urban wildlife. But just like tonight, with all this rain and the puddles that are going to be on the street or standing water in your alleyway or at the dog parks or those bowls in front of businesses that obviously have good intentions but end up being reservoirs for this, our dogs can drink this standing water or step in it and lick their feet, and then they get infected with leptospirosis. And leptospirosis, the problem with it is it can look like the flu, and a lot of owners will say, oh, my dog's just got some diarrhea, I'll kind of wait it out. But what ends up happening is it can cause liver and kidney disease, and it can be fatal. The good news is it's a bacterial disease, and we can, when diagnosed appropriately and early, we can treat it with antibiotics. But it is a zoonotic disease, and so you've got a dog that, because of this disease, is urinating all over the place. And unfortunately, owners can be exposed to this bacteria through those accidents in the house and maybe not cleaning them up with the best hygiene.
Or not knowing necessarily that you had an accident, especially if you have a toddler who likes to crawl around, put their hands in their mouth.
Yeah.
That can be a very bad situation.
Absolutely.
And somebody did die in New York City last year. So this is a serious disease.
Yeah. And I mean, people, we usually hear about lepto from triathletes that are swallowing lake water or from people going in hot springs.
Okay.
That's the most common way we hear about it. But we do know that one out of 10 pets will spread lepto to their owners. So it is a significant disease, and I will tell you, in Chicago it absolutely exists. So it's very, very important to talk to your veterinarian, especially if you live in a contaminated neighborhood, because like up by Wrigley, we have tons of alleyways and tons of standing water. And we want to make sure that people know there is a vaccination against leptospirosis. So talk to your veterinarian and make sure that it's appropriate for your dog and its lifestyle and health. And avoiding these water sources, making sure you're wiping your dog's feet and mouth when they come in, like with a baby wipe, and making sure that you're not allowing them to drink out of these standing water places, you know, as often as you can.
Yeah. You mentioned that there is a vaccine for leptospirosis. There's also one for Lyme disease in dogs.
That's right.
It's interesting. In veterinary medicine, we have a lot of things that we don't necessarily even have for humans.
I know.
Because there currently isn't a vaccine for humans for Lyme disease.
No. I mean, in human medicine, Lyme disease, I think, is still quite controversial. You know, the research that's coming behind it, and is it really curable, or is it more of a chronic managed disease? In dogs, we have a little bit more objective measurement of how infected a dog is by certain blood tests that we can run. And doxycycline, which is the antibiotic of choice for all of our tick diseases, is still very effective, thank goodness. We haven't had resistance to it. But there's a lot of new information coming out, so who knows what's going
to
happen.
Real quick, because we've got to get to the news, but people are traveling like crazy with their pets. And you guys were just named the first, I think you were certified, the first practice in Illinois to be certified fear-free.
Yes.
A quick minute about what that is and how that relates to pet owners, and also some of the products that we can use at home to help relieve fear, anxiety, and stress in our pets.
Well, you did a great job of introducing it. It's an initiative right now that's sweeping across the country, really, and it's looking at our patients. We've done a great job as veterinarians of looking out over their physical well-being in the last, you know, how many decades, but we've really not done a great job at looking after their emotional well-being. And we know so many of our pets have fear, anxiety, and stress associated with lots of different triggers: thunderstorms, fireworks, travel, or coming to the veterinary office. So what we've done is we've gone through a lot of different steps to ensure that when our dogs and cats come and their owners, that we do everything we can to make that visit as positive and as free of fear, anxiety, and stress as possible. And that can involve anything from using pheromone therapy, which I think you and Steve talk about quite a bit. So the things like Adaptil and Feel Away, which are chemicals that dogs and cats make naturally to relax. So we've been able to capture them synthetically and put them in collars and in wipes and sprays. Doing different strategies from home, like getting cats adapted more to their cat carrier, so it's not so stressful coming in. We use different lighting and different music, and we do high reward treats and things that dogs may or may not get on occasion at home, but we love giving frozen peanut butter cups and turkey hot dogs and anchovy paste and all kinds of things that are really, really tempting to take their mind into a positive place instead of a negative place, and different low stress handling so that we don't have to use scruffing or muzzles or things that may have had a negative connotation for your pet in the past. So we're really proud of it. Seventh in the country, first in Illinois. It's taken a year to really retrain ourselves and focus on the emotional well-being of pets. And we definitely are hearing very positive reviews from clients. So we're very proud of it.
That is at Blum Animal Hospital at Belmont and Clark. If you're interested, blumvet.com. You can learn more about Fear Free because they're expanding that into homes now. Fearfreehappyhomes.com to learn more about creating a more fear-free environment in your home. And of course, all of this stuff we've talked about tonight, Steve Dale covers all the time. Visit stevedalepetworld.com or give Steve Dale a like on Facebook, and you can see all sorts of videos we've done on a lot of these subjects as well. Dr. Natalie Marks, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Natalie Marks.